Welcome to the Backasswards podcast. We are the Backasswards boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful, wonderful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and envy pals, Arden is going to be actually continuing our now officially multi-part series. We added another one on today. On the flying disc craze of 1947. I am fucking obsessed with this story right now. It has been very hard for me to hold myself back from researching it on my own in the last week, because I want to be surprised with you guys, and Arden made it clear that I'm not allowed to look at some pictures and stuff. So I did.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to get into it, dude.
And honestly, the reason why this is now going to be a three-part, technically a four-part series, is because the story that the main story that we're going to be talking about tonight is quite literally insane. And so I'm very excited. That's why, because I had to take up so much of this episode. That's why I had to build another episode for the rest of what we're going to talk about next week.
And if you just can't wait until next week for another episode, another Saturday episode, you can just go over to Patreon, sign up for our $5 Manchurian Candidate tier, and you get a bonus episode every week. We're already at what it'll be 16 episodes of the Wednesday Phenomena over on our Patreon page. So you've got a really good backlog. We've been doing some really fun stuff over there, and we're going to keep doing some really fun stuff. You also get access to our Discord channel. Go ahead and support us over there. We could definitely use it.
And you also get a shout out on the main show on the Saturday episodes. And if you sign up at the $1 tier, you get the Discord and the shout out on the Saturday episode. And so it's a fun time. Come on over.
We're getting paranormal here. We're getting parasocial over there. It's great.
The Wednesday phenomenon. And before we get into part two of the flying disc craze of 1947, I would just like to list my sources for tonight's episode. Of course, every time you listen to this podcast, first stop on the research train is our good friend Wikipedia.
Because we peak our microphones and we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
Oh, it's because I'm so excited to tell you this story, Kyle. All right. So I use Wikipedia's pages on the 1947 flying disc craze, the Roswell incident, and the Rhodes UFO photographs. I also use Britannica's page on the Roswell incident, and I used an excellent source from thedebrief.com. I used an article entitled "Long Before the Phoenix Lights, There Was Incident 40" by Jazz Shaw.
I think I also used the Britannica Roswell incident page.
You probably it's really good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And guys, despite using the same source for different episodes, we are not scholars.
Nope, because we use the same Britannica source on two different episodes.
It's British. It has to be smart.
Right. Way smarter than me, at least.
We are probably going to get some things wrong. And we're also not linguists, so we are probably going to say some things wrong.
Absolutely. I'm not a ufologist. I am the annoying TA that's trying to teach the class in front of everybody.
Now, hold on to your asses and better take notes. Just because the TA is teaching does not mean that you do not need to take notes.
Oh.
We'll be on the test.
Yes.
Things are about to get backwards. Take us in, Arden. I am so fucking excited. I'm not even going to ad-lib anything. Just go.
I'm ready. All right. When we had left off last week, we had discussed the overwhelming amount of reports that came through this time period in 1947. Roughly 60 days. Well over 800 reports had come in during this time frame.
Insane.
Additionally, last week, we recapped Kenneth Arnold's story, and we also discussed the Maury Island incident, or hoax, depending on what Wikipedia page you're looking at.
Yeah, but there, I still don't know how I feel about it.
But there is so much more to the story of the flying disc craze of 1947. And we're just going to be jumping right into it with one of the biggest stories in UFO lore, and one that we have already covered on this show, Roswell.
Roswell.
Now, as many of you know, we did an episode on this way back when, so we're not going to spend too much time diving into Roswell on this series, but a brief recap is needed for some of us, including myself.
Let's be honest. Here you go.
The Roswell incident were a series of events surrounding the crash and recovery of an alleged alien aircraft near Roswell, New Mexico, which became the center of a conspiracy theory involving UFOs and extraterrestrials. And the crazy,
what do you mean, Arden? It was just a kite and a bunch of popsicle sticks. Come on.
It was just a weather balloon, Kyle. Come on. Like, what are we doing here? You know? But the crazy thing about this, Kyle, the crazy thing about this to me, because I did not make this connection until I started this series, this Roswell happened smack dab in the middle of the 1947 flying disc craze.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
at the peak of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was against this background of the 1947 disc craze that a rancher, W.W. Mac Brazel, discovered some unusual debris.
In this house, dude.
Oh, dude, we love some Mac Brazel. And our boy Brazel discovered some unusual debris near Roswell, New Mexico in June of that year. The material included tinfoil, rubber strips, and sticks. The following month...
A tinfoil-like material.
Tinfoil-like material. I should have corrected it. You're right. So the materials were a tinfoil-like material, rubber strips, and sticks. The following month, he took all of these items to the Roswell Sheriff, who in turn contacted the Roswell Army Airfield, RAAF. After collecting the wreckage, the RAAF issued an extraordinary press release that stated that a flying disc had been retrieved from a local ranch. That's what they led with.
Mm-hmm.
The Roswell Daily Record immediately picked up the press release, and on July 8th, the story was printed with the headline, RAAF Captures Flying Saucer on Ranch in Roswell Region. Almost immediately, however, the military announced that the saucer had actually been a weather balloon carrying a radar target, a device somewhat like a box kite made of tin-foiled paper-like material fastened to a balsa wood frame. That's what
I get mad just hearing it, dude. I get mad just fucking hearing it, dude. Absolute lord of dog shit.
Dude, and it's like they literally lead with the flying saucer, and then like as soon as
it was literally the next day,
they were like, no,
they released the next statement. Yeah. Or like maybe 2 days later. Yeah.
On July 9th. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Roswell Morning Dispatch noted the new claim in a July 9th, 1947 story entitled Army Debunks Roswell Flying Disc as World Simmers with Excitement. However, this article also included an interview with Brazel, who did not believe that the debris he discovered was from a weather balloon. He was like, no.
Yeah, why did men in suits come to pick up the fucking weather balloon shit from his house that he took?
What an excellent question. But strangely enough, as Kyle mentioned in our Roswell episode, which again, you should go listen to, it's really good. The Roswell incident subsequently faded from the headlines, right? Again, we're not getting too deep into Roswell. Go listen to the Roswell episode. But the interest in UFOs and aliens continued. Then the Roswell incident was published in 1980. The book's authors, Charles Berlitz and William L. Moore, labeled the weather balloon explanation as a cover story. They argued that the original debris, which they believed was from a crashed flying saucer, had been flown to Wright Field, later Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, near Dayton, Ohio, and material from a weather balloon was substituted. instead mm-hmm. of what was actually there before. So not only did the Men in Black come and pick up the shit, but then they put shit there, right? Mm-hmm. And although the book, the Roswell incident was widely disputed, this is when it really took off. It sparked additional conspiracy theories, as well as a number of hoaxes, unfortunately. Notably, yeah. In 1984, documents surfaced that were alleged to be classified memos concerning Majestic 12, MJ-12.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how many more alien episodes we're going to be able to do before we talk about Majestic 12 as its own episode.
I know.
I think that might need to be the next one in the queue.
And honestly, to oversimplify what this is, just to kind of put a bow on this, MJ-12 was allegedly a secret operation launched by President Harry S. Truman to handle the Roswell incident. This was followed by an alleged alien autopsy film, which we also brought up in our Roswell episode, that purported to show the dissection of an alien corpse from the Roswell incident.
We need to watch that, honestly. Ooh, that would be a good watch party.
That would be a good watch party, actually. Ooh. Holy shit. Subscribe to the Patreon. Like, for real. Yeah. This 17-minute video of this alien autopsy, depending on who you ask, is a fraud. Again,
it's a fraud.
It's a fraud.
It's cool, but it's a fraud.
It's really cool. Again, if you want the full deep dive, go listen to the episode, but I just had to mention Roswell here and all of that because it is so, again, it's just so crazy that it happened during the flying disc craze. Now, folks, I need you all to listen right now, okay? Because we are going to be transitioning into another crazy sighting here. And we are going to be talking about this story for the rest of the episode. Just like I mentioned, I did not know how much meat there was here. And I am so excited to tell you folks about this. It's kind of a big one. Okay? In my personal opinion, this is kind of a big one. Which is why it's getting its own episode.
Hell yeah.
This is the story of the Rhodes UFO photographs. Okay. The event in question took place in Phoenix, Arizona, in the late afternoon of July 7th, 1947. William A. Rhodes, a professional musician and an amateur photographer, radio operator, and electronics technology enthusiast, was leaving his home to go to his workshop, which he had constructed in his backyard, when he heard a noise coming from the west. He described the sound as a whooshing sound. He also noted that after the initial whoosh, the object was completely silent. According to Rhodes, from his yard, he saw nothing in that direction initially, but quickly he noticed an unusual sight to the northeast. He looked at this object, and he described it as an elliptical, flat, gray object measuring 20 to 30 feet across, traveling at 400 to 600 miles per hour approximately, spiraling downward from about 5,000 feet in altitude to 2,000 feet in altitude. You with me?
Oh, I'm with you.
Rhodes quickly ran into his workshop and grabbed his Kodak Brownie 120 box camera. This is 1947. Returning outside, he captured one picture of the object as it approached its lowest trajectory, and another photograph of the object was captured after it ended its spiraling descent and began to rapidly accelerate upwards at a 45-degree angle. Rhodes additionally claimed that the object made three passes over his house and left two trails of vapor behind. After the object disappeared into the sky, Rhodes did not waste any time sharing his experience. He almost immediately after the sighting went to the Arizona Republic newspaper, and he shared the photos that he took with this newspaper. Now, Kyle, my dear, dear friend, my professor, my leader, I want you to look at these pictures that I have for you, and I want you to please tell me what you see.
Okay, now you made a big deal about these pictures, so I literally have it just peeking over the bottom of my outline. I still have not looked at them. So I'm going to go ahead and scroll down. Okay. So they're very grainy black and white pictures of what looks to be, it's almost like a semicircle kind of shape, like a half circle with a little divot on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
It's much closer, or at least larger, in the second picture. And there is either a hole or a reflection or something coming off the middle of the craft.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Now, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here.
Yeah, sure.
This happened on July 7th.
Correct.
Mac Brazel's incident in Roswell, New Mexico. Roughly, I'm looking at Google Maps here. Roughly 300 to 400 miles from Phoenix, Arizona, to the west.
Yep.
This craft was traveling about 400 miles to 600 miles an hour to the west.
Uh-huh.
And seemed to be having some type of issues.
I'm so happy that this is happening right now.
Am I crazy?
You're not crazy. You're not even getting ahead of yourself. You're kind of getting a little bit ahead of the outline, but like you are very much on to something, Kyle. You are very, very much on to something here. I promise you.
That is interesting. Okay.
You know, when I saw these pictures for the first time, I was like, well, initially I was like, it looks like a batarang, you know?
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. It's fucking batarang, absolutely. Yeah, dude.
They kind of look like batarangs. But you want to know something that I agree with you on that you just said in one of your observations? This kind of center thing that we got going on in the craft, because you can kind of see it in the first picture too. And this is what kind of fucks me up about it, is like from the first picture's perspective, and listeners at home, I urge you to go look at these photos. These are the only two photos. These are the only two photos that exist. But in the first photo, it just looks like from our perception, I think it's a hole in the center of that ship.
Because if it was some kind of glare or reflection, this is an old box camera, which means there is likely several seconds between these two pictures being taken.
Correct.
Which means if there was a reflection or glare, the angle is going to be changing enough that it's not going to be in the same place like that.
No.
So I am inclined to agree with Arden that this is some type of hole in the ship. Whether it's damage or whether it's design is up for debate. Hey, but
yep. Exactly. And here's the thing, folks. And like we talked about Maury Island last week, but it's just interesting to draw that connection, like with somewhat of a photographic evidence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then to pair it with these pictures of a craft that's relatively similar, right? Mm-hmm. Not as big, but still. Also, the first time I saw these pictures, it freaked me the fuck out. I'm not going to lie to you.
I don't. I just can't stop looking at him.
So, with that, folks, the Arizona Republic newspaper ran an article on their front page the following day, including the two photos that the witness had taken, and quite a bit of excitement ensued after that. What William Rhodes didn't know at the time was that the federal government was also aware of the story almost immediately and had taken a very keen interest in his account. Okay? It is also worth noting here, not only the connection to Maury Island, but the Rhodes photographs also kind of match the description that Kenneth Arnold gave of his sighting as well. And the similarities between these photographs and Kenneth Arnold's sighting specifically were later noted in Project Grudge. They made that connection in Project Grudge. Mm-hmm. And that's not the only big name I'm going to drop in this one.
Oh, I'm sure.
Rhodes' sighting also may have been pushed off of the front pages fairly quickly because by some cosmic coincidence, if that is what it was, the Rhodes sighting took place on the same day that a newspaper in Roswell, New Mexico, reported the famous recovery of a flying disc. And again, it's happening during the flying disc craze of 1947. There are hundreds of reports. It is so saturated at this point, right? But what is interesting was that the government took a very specific and acute interest in these photographs, my friends. Within 24 hours of the incident being reported in the Arizona Republic on July 8th, 1947, the newspaper had been contacted by officials from the Air Force requesting copies of the two photos that he had provided. The newspaper complied with this request, and all of this was documented in the records of the Project Blue Book investigation. They continued to talk about this through Grudge into Blue Book. These photographs.
They were talking about it all the way into Blue Book.
Correct.
Oh, shit.
From Project Grudge.
Interesting.
The attention of the world quickly shifted away from these photographs to all of the other shit that was going on, honestly.
Right.
But the government did not divert its attention. Inquiries were made through a number of Air Force and Federal Intelligence Agency offices into Rhodes' sighting specifically. This information was all being directed to several offices, including the Air Materiel Command at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Friends of the show.
Coordinating with other federal agencies, an interview with Mr. Rhodes himself was finally arranged to be held in late August of 1947, less than a month after his sighting took place. And this, right here, Kyle, this is the part of the story where people talk about a lot of what, Kyle? A lot of what?
Disinformation.
Disinformation. Conspiracy.
Conspiracy. Close. I was close.
Listen to this, okay? You are going to have your brain melted right now.
Oh, I'm so excited. Give me the JFK. Come on, let's go.
Oh, my God, dude. On August 29th, 1947, that's when the interview happened, okay? He was spoken to by Special Agent George Fugit Jr. from Counterintelligence Corps, CIC, and Special Agent Brower, with specifically no first name given, and he was from the FBI, OK? Okay. Curiously, while Special Agent George Fugit revealed his identity, the agents initially, when they showed up to talk to him, were only introduced as quote-unquote representatives of the United States government. Okay? In later interviews, Special Agent Brower, who specifically didn't give his first name, would later state, quote,
I found the suppression of my full identity to be a peculiar procedure, but it was none of my business, and I continued with the interview.
What do you, I don't have it written here in the outline, but I'm kind of curious, Kyle. What do you make of that quote you just read? What do you think that that means?
I don't know, because if you're bringing up issue with the suppression of your full identity, but then still not giving a first name, seems a little weird to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. And what I also find to be interesting is that he says, I found the suppression of my full identity to be a peculiar procedure. Yeah. I find the word procedure to be really interesting there, considering that Special Agent Brower literally works for who, Kyle? What agency is he with?
He was with the FBI, right?
Uh-huh. He was with the FBI. Okay. So I don't want to give the game away here a little too much, but it kind of sounds like someone asked him, hey, don't give your full identity. And what's weird about this, and what's weird about this is that it's standard procedure, even in 1947, for you to, when you are an officer of the law, when you are representing the government, whether you're a police officer or a fucking whatever, right? You have a badge or something or some form of identification that says that you're who you say you are, and you also have to announce that you are who you say you are. Because if you work for them, you should allegedly have nothing to hide. And also, we pay taxes and we have every right to know who you are and what you're doing, right?
Right.
Whatever. And so that's why this is a very peculiar thing to have happened. All right? Now, we're still cooking. I'm just adding a little bit of ingredient with that, okay? With that little aside. But we're still cooking, all right? The pot's right. Boiling. So
we're making a stew here.
So no name Brower and fucking and George Fugit Jr., special agent, are interviewing Rhodes. And he was asked for his original photos, his originals of the craft, and the original negatives from his camera, okay?
Okay.
He complied. He gave up the photographs. But he didn't have the negatives with him. They weren't at his house. So he said that he would give them to them the next day, which he did. And additionally, he was informed that it was quote unquote unlikely that he would ever see his photos or his negatives ever again. So not only did they make a point to go over there and ask for the originals, they literally took them. They were like, give it to us. And this happened very similar to how a lot of people during JFK were like, they asked me for my
footage. That's what I was about to say. Yeah, it sounds like Mary Mormon.
They asked this guy for those photographs.
Okay. And he said yes.
He gave those to him. And this is a peculiar part of this story. The few available images of FBI agents back in the 1950s indicate that they would typically show up for assignments wearing a stereotypical male black business suit and dress shoes. Hats or dark glasses were optional back then, right? In the modern era, now, you might be sitting here thinking, well, this is really weird, really strange behavior. And you are fucking correct, my friends. It is very strange. And the reason why this particular part of the story has conspiracy wrapped up in it is because perhaps Special Agent Brower was unwittingly recruited as one of the first documented men in black. Anonymous Stop. Men in official-looking attire claiming to be from the government, asking a witness to surrender evidence to them that clearly fits the mold of the Men in Black legend. Now, Kyle, I know that you know this. One of the theories about the Men in Black is that not only can they themselves be aliens, that's one thing, right? But another theory about the Men in Black is that they actually work for the government and they keep the shit hush-hush about aliens. What or maybe what did you see? Maybe both.
Maybe
right.
Maybe it's both.
Maybe it's both.
Maybe the government is just imitating these aliens.
Really strange behavior, like high strangeness behavior. Because, again, I'm not saying that if the government showed up to my house and asked me for my original photos and negatives, that I would also not just automatically give it to them. But yeah. Also, what if there was a man in black there and there was a high strangeness and it was on a higher plane of existence than you? I don't know. I'm just saying, okay?
You son of...
He has no first name.
Come on. Holy shit. Okay.
And this is why I even say that is because William Rhodes, after the fact, was actually very upset that they took the photos. And I feel like if he would have known that he was never going to get those photos back, then he wouldn't have given those to him.
Yeah.
And this led to complications in the investigation later on.
Of course.
And speaking of the investigation, while the investigation by various elements of the United States military and intelligence agencies began literally the day after William Rhodes took photos of something unusual in the skies near his home, it stretched on for a period of several years, the investigation. Mm-hmm. Even before Rhodes was interviewed in the late August of 1947, inquiries were being made about the photos he submitted. Some of these investigations were indeed technical in nature, looking into the validity of the images, the weather conditions at the time, and other data that might substantiate or invalidate the claims of Rhodes.
So that would have been US... Project Grudge, Project Sign.
Correct.
Maybe a little bit in the Blue Book.
Correct. Exactly. Wow. The United States Air Force consulted photographic experts who... Dude, you want to know what I was thinking about? You want to know what's crazy about this? Is that we talked about in the last episode, like, the day that the Air Force happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Air Force is, like, not even a month old, and they're dealing with so much aliens. This is, like, something that is, like, happening to them, like, the moment they open their doors.
Yeah, they're like, hey guys, really we're going to fly the planes. And they're like, oh, well, I saw something in the sky.
Go look at the sky. God. So, the U.S. Air Force was conducting an investigation into the Rhodes photographs. And they consulted photographic experts who questioned the possibility of filming such an occurrence under the conditions that were described. They noted that the object was gray as described at a distance of 2,000 feet. It seems unlikely that it would appear pure black on the print, basically saying like it doesn't match up with Rhodes's story.
Okay.
They also reported that, quote,
Rhodes refers to himself as Chief of Staff of Panoramic Research Laboratory, the letterhead of which lists photography among one of its specialties. Yet, the negative was carelessly cut and faultily developed. It is covered with streaks and over a period of 6 months has faded very noticeably.
Which is what they say. You know what I mean? That's what they said. The report also noted that an OSI agent discovered a letter by Rhodes to Amazing Stories magazine in which Rhodes requested the advice of the magazine as to how to proceed to sue the government for taking the photographs and the negatives, despite being aware of the quote-unquote whereabouts of the pictures. And they also further claimed that he never requested that they return the photos to him, the government.
I mean, sure, but also they literally told him that he wasn't getting them back when they took them. So, like, of course he didn't request their return.
Yeah, like, what is he going to do?
You know? Yeah.
Go do a bunch of paperwork.
Keep in mind, this is coming from the same people that said the shit at Roswell was fucking popsicle sticks and tinfoil. Like,
for real? It's so true.
Come on.
It's so true. I know. And we're just going through the military response, the military investigation section of my outline right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in the Air Force investigation's final report, they concluded that the photographed object was likely wind-blown debris.
Yeah, okay.
All right? Dr. Irving Langmuir, an American chemist and physicist who studied the subject photographs, later recalled saying, quote,
"Well, they, the sign people, had one photograph or two photographs taken by one man. It looked to me like a piece of tar paper when I first saw it, and the two photographs showed the same thing in entirely different shapes. I asked for more details about it. What was the weather like at the time? Well, they didn't know, but they would look it up. It was taken about 15 or 20 minutes after a violent thunderstorm out in Ohio. Well, what's more natural than some piece of tar paper picked up by a little miniature twister and being carried a few thousand feet up into the clouds as it was coming down? That's all. So what could it be? But it was going at enormous speed. Of course, the man who saw it didn't have the vaguest idea of how far away it was, and that's the trouble. If you see something that's up in the sky, a light or any kind of object, you haven't the vaguest idea of how big it is. You can guess anything you like about the speed. You ask people how big the moon is, and some say it's as big as your fist or as big as a baseball. Some say as big as a house. Well, how big is it really? You can't tell by looking at it.
Now, disinformation.
Now, Kyle, I have a task for you to do if you would so oblige me. I want you to scroll back up in the document and I want you to look at these fucking photos that I showed you. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want you to ask yourself a couple of questions. Does it for first and foremost, does it look like tar paper? And does it look like it's in a different shape between the two photos, Kyle?
You know, Arden, not only does it not look like tar paper, it actually looks like the exact same shape. And also, we're saying this twister was in Ohio, right? This photograph was taken in fucking Arizona. That is hundreds and hundreds, if not over 1,000 miles away. Are you really telling me that a piece of tar paper flew halfway across the continental United States from a small twister? Get out of my house.
Dude, I don't understand. I don't understand.
What?
And it's like, here's the thing. Yes, sometimes your eyes can deceive you and your perception can be warped or the angle is weird. But if you pair what he said with the photographic evidence that was provided, it doesn't make a goddamn sense what he's saying.
Also, wait, I'm sorry. I need to do some math here. We're going to go on the high end of the scale. 20 minutes would mean that piece of tar paper... Are you ready for this, Arden? for that piece of tar paper to have come from a storm in Ohio and had its photograph taken 20 minutes later in Arizona, it would have had to be going 4,755 miles per hour.
Yeah. I love it. I love it
so
much.
Are you shitting on my face and telling me it's raining right now? Like,
I think that's the perfect way to describe it.
What?
Yep.
Oh my God. I'm like mad. Holy shit.
Something that I feel like that I learned at JFK during our JFK series is that for all of the cover-ups and all of the work that the government does, they're really bad at covering their ass. They come up with the stupidest fucking shit. Come up with the dumbest shit. I don't understand.
Yeah, he was protesting JFK's dad and his policies or some bullshit. Yeah. Yeah. Come on!
It was that one day. It's the same umbrella 15 years later.
There was a storm 1,500 miles away. Obviously. What is more natural? Arden, what is more natural than
what is more
a
natural?
Twister pulling off a piece of a roof and flinging it 3/4 of the way across the continental United States in 20 minutes? Planes couldn't go that fast.
No.
What do you mean?
No.
And if that is a piece of tar paper,
going that fast.
Honestly, if that is a piece of tar paper from a storm in Ohio, we need to be researching that because that is fucking insane.
That's crazy.
That's one of the most anomalous things I have ever heard in my entire life. How did it go 4,700 miles an hour?
Dude, it sounds like the Kentucky meat shower, you know?
That's like Mach 6.
Yeah.
Mach 7. That's crazy.
That's aliens.
That's aliens.
Either way, you just said that there are aliens. And further to his point, I mean, some people say that the moon is as big as a baseball, Kyle. Like, you don't know how big it is.
It might even be as big as a house.
What are you talking about? How big is it really?
Who is this fucking nerd?
Is it really? It's the size of these nuts in your mouth, dog. Like, come on.
Oh, Arden, have you seen this dude's face? Langmuir's face?
Yes, I have, yes.
He is absolutely a disinformation agent. Are you fucking kidding me?
Dude, I'm sorry. I hate to profile people, but like, goddamn, you look like a fucking narc. You look like someone who would turn your back on your friends and your country.
You're telling me a physics professor is trying to say this bullshit?
Yes. Yes.
Get out of here.
They asked him. The government asked him to look at this.
Oh my God. I'm so angry. Please keep going.
What is additionally disturbing about this, Kyle, and it's additionally disturbing for William Rhodes, is that at the same time that they were looking into like all this shit with the flying discs, they were also looking very deeply into William Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I can't. We'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it in a second. The investigative records that were later assembled as part of Project Grudge clearly shows that the government was looking into virtually every single aspect of William Rhodes' life to determine the nature of his character and how quote-unquote patriotic of a citizen he was.
Right.
So multiple reports showed that the government had requested a full record of Rhodes's credit history as well as his personal history, with his neighbors being interviewed to determine what sort of person William Rhodes was.
They had Men in Black pulling his fucking credit report?
Yep.
That's nuts.
Uh-huh. And this is all in Project Grudge, folks. Like, they documented this.
Yeah, we know about it. It's there for us to see.
One early report in regard to all this stated, quote,
"There are other undesirable aspects to this case. The observer's character and business affiliations are presently under investigation."
Straight out of the book. straight out of what they said. They said that they were looking into this guy. And subsequent reports show that the investigation took a great deal of interest into many aspects of Rhodes' life that had nothing to do with the unidentified aerial phenomena. Those investigations resulted in reports that delved into very private matters. One report recorded that his mother was a Russian immigrant, with suggestions that the family's loyalties might lie elsewhere because she's from Russia.
Yeah, we've heard that before.
Uh-huh. It was also noted that he was a musician and that his wife was the only source of income for his family.
Oh, my God. God.
Oh my God! They report further claimed that Rhodes was not religious! And, worst of all, a registered Democrat.
Kill him.
Oh my God. Along with the fact that he didn't even fucking vote in the last election. He didn't even use his liberal ass fucking
he
vote.
He registered as a Democrat and then didn't even bother to vote.
Oh my God.
Clearly.
How unpatriotic of you.
Clearly a fucking Russian communist. Obviously he didn't see a UFO. Obviously
not.
He didn't even vote. How could he have seen a UFO?
Nope. Only people who vote see aliens, and they don't see aliens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I voted and I saw my UAP, so
yeah, you know. So there you go. All of this information, all this personal information, was recorded in the investigation. Despite the fact that interviews with his neighbors recorded him as being an excellent neighbor who devotes considerable time to community projects. Everybody loved him.
Bro was participating in collective action before that was even really like a thing. That's crazy. Dude,
and like, they're trying so hard. Isn't that kind of weird of the government to do? In this scenario, like if it's so fake, if it's so not real, why are you trying to fucking dig into him so hard? You know what I mean?
It's literally, why are you so obsessed with me?
Yeah,
you
hate me.
Why are you so obsessed with me?
Why are you so obsessed with him? God. Oh, professor.
Like, just ask him out. You're obviously obsessed with him.
For real. just ask for his number. Just talk to him. The final reports from the investigation were conflicting in many regard.
Not a United States government investigation. No.
I can't imagine. Some investigators found the sighting highly compelling, while others wrote it off completely. But it was clear that there were questions being raised about William Rhodes from the beginning. We know that. One report in particular highlighted the divided nature of the opinions into both the photographic evidence and the credibility of the witness. On the first page of one of those final reports, investigators concluded that, quote,
no astronomical explanation seems possible for the unusual object cited in this incident. This case is especially important because of the photographic evidence and because of the similarity of these photographs to the drawing by Redacted in Incident 17. Incident 17 was the Kenneth Arnold sighting. These two best attested, entirely independent cases should agree so closely concerning the shape of the object and its maneuverability. Incident 40 is one of the most crucial in the history of these objects.
Incident 40, referring to the Rhodes UFO photos that we've been talking about this entire episode. So incident 17 is Kenneth Arnold. Incident 40 is this, right? The report further recommended a continued investigation and the gathering of more evidence. But on page 2 of the exact same report, that wants further investigation, in a complete 360 or a 180, it cautions that, quote,
There remains the strong possibility that the entire incident is spurious, and the investigation and the invention of an excitable mind. This strengthens the need for reinvestigation. If this fact, that Incident 40 is fabricated, should be highlighted and even publicized to quash enthusiasm for irresponsible reporting of saucers and like objects.
So literally, on the one hand, you have them being like, oh, damn, there might be something going on here. We should definitely look into it more and get more evidence. And then all of a sudden, they're like, fuck this guy. If this is a lie, we should shout it to the heavens and make everybody shut up about flying saucers. Page 2 of the same report. Page 2.
Yeah. Welcome to UFO research, Arden. It's just...
I learn more every day, but I just learn the same things over and over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They do the same thing. And it should be no surprise that these contradictory kind of paragraphs or pages continue throughout all of the final reports. They keep on flip-flopping back and forth the entire time. But one person who seemed to come down on the side of lending credibility to Incident 40, these fucking pictures, was our boy, our man, our absolute goddamn zaddy, Dr. J. Allen Mother Fucking Hynek.
That beard, that pipe. Ooh, come on,
God
dude.
Damn, bro.
Absolute zaddy.
In his analysis of the reports listed in Project Grudge, he broke down all of the sightings in Project Grudge into three categories with multiple subcategories for each. This is not the close encounter scale. This is a different one. So category one covered astronomical phenomena such as meteors, stars, planets, or related naturally occurring lights in the sky. Right? That's what category one is. Category two was described as, quote, non-astronomical, but suggestive of other explanations. These included objects such as balloons, aircraft, rockets, flares, birds, or other mundane things that are regularly observed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Category three was reserved exclusively for events characterized as being, quote, non-astronomical with no explanation evident. And then he broke category three down into subsections. Subsection 3A, which was written off as, quote, lack of evidence precluding explanation. Okay. Category 3B is identified as evidence offered. It suggests no explanation. And Incident 40 is listed in Category 3B, which is evidence offered suggests no explanation.
To translate, that means some fucky shit is going on.
Yep.
Yeah. It means aliens is what it means.
It means that there is non-astronomical phenomena with no explanation evident, and that there is evidence offered to it, and there is still no explanation. It's not birds. It's not an aircraft. It's not blah, blah, blah. According to J. Allen Hynek.
Tar paper.
Exactly. Flying over from Ohio.
Dude, that is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever fucking heard. That, holy shit.
That is your umbrella man brings the umbrella back 15 years later.
Yeah, literally.
Oh, man. So that's how J. Allen Hynek looks at Incident 40. One of the great bones of contention in the entire Incident 40 case was what became of the photos and the negatives from William Rhodes' camera after the initial investigation. By 1952, so 5 years after, the Air Force somehow discovered, once again, that Rhodes had been in contact with a magazine where he asked the magazine, like, how can I sue the government and get my pictures back? This seemed to cause some consternation among government officials who had been studying the sighting, leading the Air Force Directorate of Intelligence at Wright-Patterson to report that they did not have the negatives. Interesting. But they also reported that if they were found, they should be returned to Rhodes with apologies in order to, quote unquote, avoid press excitement. So they're like, we don't got them. But if we find them, we'll bring them back and we'll say sorry. Like, just,
we'll
just
for sure bring them over. Yeah.
Just don't say anything.
God.
Just don't tell my wife.
Got him. Fucking this nailed him.
Yep. Yep. This led the Air Force Office of Intelligence, AFOIN, to send a letter to Captain Edward J. Ruppelt of Project Blue Book fame, by the way.
Another friend of the project, for mm-hmm. sure.
Asking for the negatives to be returned to us soonest, is what they said. Ruppelt was assured that if the negatives were returned, copies would be made for his records. Ruppelt quickly responded, saying that his office did not have the negatives. He also went further, advising that he wasn't even sure if Rhodes had ever sent the negatives to the government, saying that his office had concluded that the photos were probably not authentic. He then went on to suggest that Rhodes was attempting to get on the picture-selling bandwagon, and if the government confirmed that they had been in possession of the negatives, it could lead to a touchy situation.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Okay.
These questions about the provenance and possession of the negatives are not borne out by government records, however. A routing and record sheet shows that the negatives were in possession of the Technical Projects Office of the Air Materials Command at Wright-Patterson on February 19, 1948. Other records in the archive demonstrate that the negatives had been examined and analyzed by a variety of experts to determine the equipment used to take the pictures, what type of film used, and the potential veracity of the images. While it may be possible that Ruppelt's office had somehow lost the negatives by the time the investigation was reaching its conclusion, it remains well documented that the negatives traveled back and forth between Wright-Patterson and other offices for some time. They know where it is, dude.
Yeah.
They have them.
It's like you guys are saying you don't have them, but the last documentation of where it was says that you guys have them. So did you lose them?
Kind of sounds like you didn't. Kind of sounds like you're being like, I'm not giving you back the fucking photo. We lost them.
Sounds like that.
Sorry.
Kind of sounds like
that. Sorry, I lost them. Fuck you. All of this to say, William A. Rhodes's 15 minutes of fame came and went fairly quickly in July and August of 1947. That may have been because he reported his sighting and submitted his photographs to the local media only 2 weeks after the Kenneth Arnold sighting caught the attention of everybody, and the world learned of the Roswell incident the day after his report reached the press and all of that good stuff. But behind the scenes, the government found reason to describe his report as one of the, quote, two best attested entirely independent cases of UFO sighting reports. Even J. Allen Hynek found the evidence to be compelling with no obvious alternate explanation, right?
Right.
Folks, this is definitely one of the most buck wild stories I have ever heard in a while. And whether you believe in the sighting or not, what we do know is that the government of the United States of America had a very, very keen interest in this case and these photographs. What does that mean?
Arden, I'm sitting here and I'm wondering, you know, we've had this crazy, crazy story this week. And I'm just wondering, what does it mean?
I'm going to tell you how I feel in a second, but it really is up to you, the listener, the folks at home, what this means to you. The only thing that I want to say is that there is no doubt that something was in the sky. Dude took photographs of something in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And the government hopped on that shit so fucking quick. And that, my little J. Allen Hynix, was part two of the flying disc craze of 1947.
Holy shit, Arden.
I feel like I just ran a 100-meter dash.
That was fucking crazy. Dude, the government is so bad at covering stuff up, and they just keep doing it.
I know.
Well done, Arden. Amazing. Thanks. Amazing research. I guess let's get to the root of the question here. Is that an alien in those pictures?
I definitely think that aliens happened on this day.
Me too.
Almost 1,000%. Yeah.
I'm going to almost even take it a step further and say that until I do a little more research into specific times and stuff, I am going to do that. I think that there's a good chance that's the fucking craft that crashed at Roswell.
It is entirely possible. And this is exactly what you were alluding to earlier that I'm so glad that you brought up when you did, because like it kind of dropped the little hint that like these are very close to each other.
Mm-hmm. It's closer than Ohio.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. You're right about that. Uh-huh. And that's one of the crazy things about this story for me, is that it is so close to Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just,
and the fact that the government jumped on it with about the same veracity that it jumped on the Roswell situation is something.
Mm-hmm. The federal government.
If this was just a dude faking some UFO pictures, why did they care so much?
Mm-hmm.
They don't care nearly as much about any of the other people that are faking UFO photos. You know what they do? They say they're faking a UFO photo and they close the file.
And like, they move on. Mm-hmm.
They don't keep reinvestigating it for 6 years during the peak of government UFO investigation. They don't.
Yep. Yeah, not a lot of these stories are brought up in both Project Grudge and Project Blue Book.
No.
So, I definitely think that something happened. I'm also curious as to what you think about the Men in Black angle that they described earlier.
The Men in Black angle is very interesting. I think he could be Special Agent Bowser. What was it? Bauer? Frank something?
Browser.
Browser. Oh god, it's so far away in the outline. Oh my god, we talked about it so much. Brower, yeah.
Yeah, Brower.
I think it's definitely possible that he was at the very least like a precursor to what we know as the Men in Black, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
I also think specifically that the craft is a donut shape, which it's so interesting to me that we hadn't really talked about donut shaped crafts up until this point.
We haven't a lot, no.
But we have talked about them so much during this series specifically. I just think that that's interesting. That it was a lot of people were seeing a lot of donut-shaped UAPs.
Oh, yeah. And this time
specifically.
We will talk about donut-shaped UAPs more throughout the show for sure. They're a very common sighting. And it seems like this is where that originated, right? In this kind of
probably
first UFO flap, you know?
Probably.
It's insane. And I can't wait to see how you wrap this up next week, dude. I'm so excited. Once again, I'm gonna stop myself from researching anything on my own because I want my brain melted like it was today. Holy shit!
I did it.
Oh yes.
Oh fuck yes, Kyle. I am so happy that that happened. That's awesome.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, so we're two for two. Aliens and the government was trying to cover it up. Like for sure.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Dude, fuck these guys. Dude, they did such a bad job. The government did such a bad job hiding this one.
Like, even for the government, they did a pretty
terrible
shit job. Yeah.
Terrible. Wow. Poor execution. Strange behavior.
Mm-hmm. Not high strange, just strange.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so much. I love being the Anakin Skywalker to Kyle's Obi-Wan Kenobi. It is so special that we get to do stuff like this. Thank you very much.
You can subscribe and review if you're enjoying the show. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please go ahead and share it with them.
Because word of mouth is the best way to spread that the Backasswards podcast officially flipped the tables and Arden melted Kyle's brain today. And you know that a podcast that does that and operates like that is your favorite podcast.
Absolutely. You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I am going to recommend our episode on, I think I'm going to recommend our episode on Area 51.
Oh my God. One of my favorite jokes of all time came out of Area 51 because Area 51 is basically like, there's aliens here, and there's no aliens there, which, not to give the game away too much, but it's a great episode. Go listen to it. It's fucking awesome.
You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at BackassWordKyle. Arden is at Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias. On Twitter, at BackassWordsPod. Instagram, BackassWordsPod. TikTok, BackassPod. On Facebook, just search the BackassWords Podcast. And as we said at the top of the show, we have a Patreon now. You can support us. You can help us pay our bills. It's great. And if you support us at the $5 Manchurian Candidate tier, you unlock access to the Wednesday Phenomena.
The Wednesday Phenomenon. It's such a fun time, folks. Come on
it's
over.
It's so much fun over there. We're always doing something cool over there. So go ahead and join us. I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we'll see you next week, unless there's a tornado roughly 1,600 miles away from your house. And it just flings tar paper at 8 times the speed of sound towards you. Duck.
So that you can stay safe.
Yeah.
And as that tar paper is flying at you at the speed of Mach 7, just remember to get out your box camera and capture a really, really, for all intents and purposes, for it being 1947, a really good photograph of it, which is also something that we didn't really talk about, is like, if it was going that fast, then how the fuck would he have caught such a good picture of it so that you can stay weird?
The danger is fucking real, my friends.
It's so real, you don't even understand. If you take pictures of aliens, the government will take it and you will never see it again. Stay safe out there.
We'll see you guys next week. Tar paper, dude!
Fuck those guys, huh? Those from Ohio?
No!
Dude, these Nerds gummy clusters are fucking up my world right now.
I love Nerds gummy clusters. I got some fucking Haribo mini rainbow frogs. Kind of gas.